Welcome back to Jazzed. Thank you for listening. This is a crazy time to be a jazz fan, to be a fan of the NBA, to be a fan of sports. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a whole lot of no sports, but it's still fun to, you know, talk about the Jazz, talk about, you know, memories, ponder a little bit of what might happen. And our guest today, his name's Lucas Falk. I know that if you're a fan on Twitter, you've definitely seen Luke and his you know, his handle and his tweets. And when I started the podcast, he was someone I reached out to a long time ago. So, Luke, thanks for joining us, and thanks for waiting, because I know we originally talked like several months ago. But how's it going?
You know, I'm glad we waited. You know, just timing right after an earthquake couldn't be better. That's exactly how I wanted it to happen. So, thank you for putting me on the docket today.
Yeah. So, for those who don't know, today in Utah there was an earthquake this morning. How did it go for you?
You know, I was actually kind of getting some notes ready for this podcast when all of a sudden I'm looking up at my TV and it's about to fall off the wall. So I grabbed my dog, and my elementary school skills just kicked in, and I ran under the doorway. Later I found out that's not the best place to go, but, you know, just fight or flight habit. Went right under the doorway to ride out that 10 seconds or so, but it was pretty scary. I mean, as anyone in Utah could feel, it was pretty heavy.
Yeah. Are you in Salt Lake, or were you closer to the epicenter?
Yeah, so I'm just in Salt Lake. So fortunately, you know, I wasn't right in the epicenter, but hopefully everyone in Magna and the surrounding areas are doing all right.
Yeah. So I'm up in Davis County, and we felt it up there. I don't think it was as strong as Salt Lake, but yeah, it was like 7:09 or 7:10 in the morning, right? And I was awake, but I was still kind of like laying in bed. So I would say I'm like 70% awake. And my very first thought was, you know, when like a really loud truck drives by, and yep, I'm like, absolutely, what is that? And then I probably have seen too many movies, but then like the next second or like the next half second, and you know, this goes so fast, right? I'm like, dude, someone's trying to like break in my house. Like, who just like kicked down my garage or something, you know, like somebody just like caved in my garage or whatever. So I like pop out of bed, and then like, you know, then the next nanosecond, I'm like, dude, this is an earthquake. And like, you know, I have two little kids. One was awake. My wife was feeding one, my little 9-month-old, and she's kind of like freaking out, like, oh my gosh, what do we do? And then my 4-year-old, we go in his room and he's like, what was that? Like, he wasn't fazed. He was just like, oh, what was that? That was weird. But yeah, totally like surreal. Like, yeah, I know a lot of people have been through earthquakes, a lot of people in like California or other areas where there are a lot, but it doesn't happen in Utah that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think I experienced a minor one when I was living in South America, but I was asleep when it happened, and I slept through it. And so this was the first time I actually could feel it, and it's pretty terrifying. And, you know, so I hope that was the big one that everyone's been talking about.
Yeah. I mean, during this week, too, of the coronavirus, yeah, it's like everyone, at least in Utah, and I know we have our own little bubble of Utah, but like everyone's like, what, what is happening? Just one after the next, just like, we're here, we're trying to figure out how to like social distance, and then all of a sudden there's earthquakes. It's kind of a unprecedented like time. It's really weird.
It's not a good week. Let's say that. We've had better weeks.
Yes, we have. So yeah, first off, back to like the sports and jazz, and how is it going? I know it's only been a week, literally a week since, you know, Rudy was tested positive and the NBA and the sports world kind of shut down. So how is that kind of going for you? How is it not having sports in your life right now?
I mean, it's a little odd to see, you know, Jazz games pop up on my calendar, knowing that that game's definitely not going to be played. And so I'm a big sports fan beyond just the Jazz. So there's definitely a big time void, let's say. So I've been, you know, filling it up with shows that I've been meaning to catch up on and things like that. My cell phone screen time has just skyrocketed, and it's not coming down. So,
yeah.
But I mean, other than that, you know, obviously, these kind of things put life into perspective, as cheesy as that is to say. But yeah, so I mean, it definitely sucks not having sports, and I look forward to, you know, when the Jazz are on TV again. I just saw that AT&T Sportsnet is going to start showing some older Jazz games, which very exciting, very pumped about. But I'm looking forward to when the real life Jazz are back in action.
Yeah. Well, that's one, you know, one major question now is that I think everyone is thinking, at least NBA wise, is, you know, obviously we don't know, you and I are just speculating, you know, but when will it come back? You know, you start thinking about possible timelines and what has to happen. And obviously when it does, like, there's not going to be any fans. And I think most people are going to be like, are just fine with that. And then you start hearing, you know, well, you know, arenas get booked out, so they're going to have to play in, like, different venues or high schools or practice gyms. And I start thinking, like, are we going to see an NBA Finals in, like, ZBBC? Like, how crazy would that be?
I would take that. I mean, if the NBA Finals are happening at the Zions Bank Basketball Center, that means the Jazz are in them, and I'm totally happy with that. But, yeah, I mean, if you would have asked me a few days ago if I thought, you know, how confident I would be for the season to return, I'm not entirely certain. I mean, the owners just spoke with the former Surgeon General and kind of gave a pretty grim outlook, according to, you know, what Woj was reporting. And so I'm not entirely confident we're going to see the NBA return for the 2019-2020 season.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because, like, you think, you know, they put it on a 30-day pause. And then you got to think that, you know, whenever another player or players get a positive test, it almost feels like that needs to be another 30 day, or like, it's almost like it just gets set. Like, it just keeps getting reset, you know, like, let's say 2 weeks from now, there's a positive on someone in the league. And then it's like, is it another 30 days? Like, I know the league doesn't even know, but it's when you start thinking about it, I really do think there's, yeah, like you said, a real shot of the season just being canceled.
Which is pretty heartbreaking. I mean, I would never want for that to happen, but obviously, you know, safety and the welfare of the players and society as a whole is of the utmost importance. But having an NBA season just kind of cut short would be, I mean, in terms of awards, like, how would that all work?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about that, and it's like, it almost seems like if there's no playoffs and there's no, you know, champion, does this just have this crazy, like, asterisk next to it in the record books of just, like, not finished? And I don't think you can have awards. I don't know. Like, maybe if this season had finished, like, we were the NCAA and we were kind of just right at the brink of the playoffs, maybe, but it seems like it would feel weird to award an MVP before the season ended and there was, like, no champion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the 30 for 30 on this season, if it were to be canceled, is just going to be absolutely entertaining and sad at the same time.
Yeah, it's just, like you said, like, we want, you know, we're all part of this, like, not just the NBA or the Jazz, but, like, the world, like, you know, we want I'm just sitting here thinking, I can't wait to see a tweet where it's like, such and such company has created a vaccine, get the shot and you're good. Like, that's like my number one priority right now, or hope, I should say.
Yeah, no, absolutely. 100% agreed.
But yeah, let's say the NBA does come back, and let's say it comes back mid-July. Let's just hypothetically speaking, What do you think would happen if they came back mid-July? Do you think they would just go right into the playoffs? Or do you think there would be some kind of shortened season, shortened playoffs? Like, what do you think is, like, realistic?
Yeah, I don't think they would necessarily want to jump right back into the playoffs. You know, being on that long of a hiatus, even though these guys are most likely, you know, working on their craft and taking care of themselves, there's going to be some rust. So I think they would want some sort of shortened regular season kind of buffer to at least try to get back into the groove. I mean, I know 5-10 games probably isn't enough, but they would want to at least give some time so that by the time the playoffs start, it's not the first time that we're seeing live game action. So I would definitely foresee a shortened end of the regular season and then probably back to a five-game first-round series and then seven games the rest of the way. Just there's so much to kind of cram in this, you know, in such a short time that I don't think they'd be able to pull off finishing out the regular season and doing an extended playoff run.
Yeah. And then if that's the case, that's this hypothetical case, what happens to the next season?
Well, Bobby Marks from ESPN kind of laid out what a new NBA calendar would look like if they were to just shift everything, you know, moving forward, playoffs would start mid-June, finals in early August, draft end of August, free agency starts in September, fall league, summer and fall leagues in September 10th, training camp opens December 10th, and then the season would kick off on Christmas Day, and the regular season would end mid-June. And I actually think that's kind of an intriguing calendar year. You're not going up against football as much. You're kind of competing against baseball, which right now is the weaker of the two sports. So I could see a possibility where they just shift the calendar and keep it that way moving forward.
Yeah, I could see that. That would be, it would take a minute to get used to, but I mean, I don't think I would necessarily hate it. You know, it would be weird at first, but if you go a season or two, you can, I think you would get used to it. You know, and we all kind of complain about, or at least I do, like the summer months anyway, of like, like there's not a lot going on, even if I do like baseball or every 4 years there's Olympics or whatever. But
yeah, no, absolutely. I just think it would be too hard to have this kind of truncated season right now and then go back and try and continue, you know, starting back with the regular NBA calendar year. I don't think it could be done.
Let's go back a little of like last week. You know, where were you? Were you about to watch the game against OKC? Like, let's go back to that day and like the thoughts and like how that all kind of unfolded in your eyes.
Yeah, if I recall, it was a 6 o'clock tip off. So normally I've got the game on record and I'll kind of start it a little bit later so I can fast forward through commercials, things like that. But I started a little bit later. And so as I was fast forwarding, I could see, you know, this long stretch of the officials and then Billy Donovan and Quinn Snyder talking. And so I had to stop and rewind and go back through it and just wondering, why hasn't the game started? Like, what is going on? And initially I thought, I knew Gobert had been ruled out with an illness, but my first thought was there's got to be like a bomb in the building.
Yeah.
Or some sort of security threat. That was my first reaction. But then obviously as Twitter rolled through, you could see, oh my gosh, Gobert's tested positive for the coronavirus. And the whole league is shutting down.
Right. It seemed to just be, just like you said, like confusion. I thought the same thing. Like, there has to be, it can't be an, you know, because Rudy's sick. Like, even if he has the virus, he's not there. I thought the same thing because you kept seeing like police, you know, around. And I was like, oh, there's some kind of scare at the arena, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy how quickly and how Twitter is. For those who, you know, are frequent Twitter and how news happens and it just kind of snowballs. And yeah, we get the tweet from Shams, or I think Shams tweeted it first. Rudy Gobert tested positive. And then I, you know, 2 minutes later, the NBA season has been suspended. And it's like, oh my gosh, like it there was not even time to like let the Rudy thing sink in all the way before the bigger bomb hit. And it's just kind of a crazy time to be like a Jazz fan. Like, I talked to Tiffany Gurney about it, and it's like, if you're an NBA fan, you know, it's weird, but like the fact that it's our team and it's our guys, and like they were like, we'll talk a little bit more about this and how unfair it is that like we're singled out, or the Jazz or Rudy, but it's crazy how we were the team that kind of like broke the sporting world.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of been a rough year for the Jazz, and just in terms of perception. I mean, obviously the coronavirus and people unfairly putting the blame on Rudy Gobert and the Jazz organization. And then obviously the, you know, more recently than that, the fan behavior, racist comments, things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of been a rough year in terms of perception for the Jazz and Jazz Nation.
Yeah. Was, so Luke's brother, Aaron, works for the Jazz. Aaron Falk, awesome guy. I think everyone loves Aaron. He's one of those guys that everyone just really, really likes. Was Aaron there? Was he in OKC?
Yeah, Aaron's fine. He was not in OKC. He had just been with the team in Boston and returned home. And so he didn't have to go through the quarantine process. He wasn't stuck in the locker room or have to go through that same ordeal that many of the Jazz beat writers had to go through. So he's doing fine in good health. And he didn't have to go through that process or anything.
That's good. It kind of reminds me, it's obviously super different, but it reminds me of the lockout in the sense that, mm-hmm. So when the lockout was happening, you know, I work for the Jazz and we were trying to figure out, you know, content. But at the time it was tricky because we couldn't mention any current NBA players. So we had to just, everything that we put out had to be former or retired players, no players that are in the league. So it was a really tricky time to like find content or come up with stuff. And I was writing blogs like, who's the best six man ever? And just like randomness. And I got to assume, you know, like it's tough coming up with content. And I don't even know if they're trying to do anything right now other than just like news, but it's got to be a tricky time for him and for the Jazz, you know, content team, like figuring out what to put out there, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, it's in short supply, but fortunately we have a lot of creative and talented people in the Jazz organization as far as that's concerned, so I'm sure they'll continue to put out quality content for us to consume.
Yeah. One thing that came to my mind of, like, that day, you know, again, these are all kind of, like, different, but maybe, you know, equally as shocking or just kind of like you remember where you were kind of things as far as Jazz history goes. And so if I were to lay out the four that come to my mind, obviously we have, you know, the coronavirus and Rudy and Donovan becoming or testing positive. But then you go back to what other events, at least in the recent memory, were shocking or that you always remember where you were. I think we go back to Coach Sloan resigning. You go back to D. Will being traded shortly after that, and you go back to Hayward leaving as a free agent. So when you think about, again, obviously they were all different, but how do those like stack up, or what was like the most shocking in your mind?
I mean, obviously just the abruptness of the D. Will Sloan kind of back to back, that obviously has to be one of the more shocking moments for a Jazz fan. You've got basically the man who is and will always be the coach of the Utah Jazz, all of a sudden saying, hey, I'm out, and then all of a sudden your star player's gone within such a short time period. So that clearly was shocking. Hayward, there was always a chance he was going to leave, so I don't think it was necessarily a shock. I do remember where I was with Hayward more than I do with D. Will and Sloan, just because it was the 4th of July, so Hayward basically single-handedly, you know, ruined a lot of barbecues for a lot of people that day. But in terms of just shock value, that D. Will Sloan, that kind of collapse in such a short period, has to be up there in terms of just pure shock value.
Yeah. More than, would you put that more than like this current stuff that's going on?
No, I mean, obviously I think the coronavirus would have to be number one, just because one, it has such a widespread impact beyond our sports consumption, just our day-to-day lives are now all wrapped up in this. And it was the first domino to fall in a series that just shut down every sports league imaginable. So
yeah.
That definitely has to be the biggest one so far.
Yeah. It's funny, I remember where I was with D. Will only because I was on vacation in Hawaii. And, you know, Hawaii, I think it's like at the time, like 4 or 5 hours, you know, behind So I remember waking up to just like my phone again, because I worked for the Jazz and my phone was just going off. Like it was right after the All-Star game, right? And my phone would not stop buzzing in like 5 a.m. or whatever it was in Hawaii, 4 a.m. And I'm like, what is going on with my phone? And so I look at it and I get all these texts and people just saying like, I can't believe it. Is this real? What's going to happen? Blah, blah, blah. Luckily, so I was there with my wife and my sister-in-law. It was just the three of us. This is how crazy I am. And I'm sitting there. I couldn't leave the hotel room. I was watching ESPN and just like texting people or whatever all day because I couldn't get over the news of us trading Darren Williams. That one to me, I'll never forget because I was so like, I can't believe it. Like, cause you know, D Will was like our guy and obviously, you know, we all know the history between him and Coach and it was like this really inevitable thing that was going to happen, but it was still like really shocking.
You know what? There are worse places to receive that kind of news, Matt. I'm sorry. I do not feel bad that you were in Hawaii when all this was going down.
Oh, man. But yeah. If my sister-in-law hadn't been there, my wife would have been like, I don't know if we can stay married today. another big topic, and it's kind of strange to talk about, and again, like we're only speculating, and I, you know, we're not getting too deep into things, but as fans, it's kind of hard not to talk about kind of the chemistry, and obviously, you and I, we don't know anything that's going on as far as like actual facts in the locker room and stuff with players and chemistry and stuff, but like it's so unsettling to kind of hear that there's drama or there's rifts between Rudy and Donovan or Rudy and other players and that the locker room is just not a good place right now. Like, not that I'm asking you to like say what do you think happened, but like it's kind of unsettling, you know, that they're not like galvanizing and, you know, like saying I know, you know, kind of just having each other's back more.
Yeah, I mean, well, one, I'd just like to take time to plug Tony Jones's recent story about this. It kind of showed a little bit of light on the current dynamics of the locker room, and it's really great. So subscribe, read it. It's a very good article. In terms of, you know, being able to restore that chemistry, obviously right now it's a pretty frustrating and stressful time. And so I don't necessarily blame the players for not taking the time to rally around each other just because right now we're in the middle of a pandemic. It's extremely stressful. And so I'm not going to necessarily, you know, hold anyone accountable for being frustrated in such a time. But I do think that things will smooth over. Hopefully absence makes the heart grow fonder. Donovan has showed a great deal of maturity throughout his career. Gobert, who just to be clear, my stance, I mean, the only thing we know 100% that Rudy is guilty of is taking the virus too lightly. I don't think he was acting with malice, you know, especially with the microphones and things like that. So we don't know where Rudy got it. We don't know where Donovan got it. And I'll just leave it at that. But Rudy's, you know, showed a lot of humility and contrition in terms of how he's handled the virus or how seriously he took it. And so I do think they'll be able to patch things up. Quinn Snyder obviously has a law degree, so I'm sure he's got some mediation skills up his sleeve. So hopefully he can, you know, kind of resolve this dispute. But I just think it's as time goes on and as the situation as a whole gets better in society, I think they'll be able to patch things up and be able to play basketball with one another.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. And it's such an emotional thing. And, you know, for us, and we're not even, you know, we're not the players. We're not the guys infected. We're not the ones on SportsCenter every 5 minutes. Well, maybe not as much now, but when it happened, it was constant. So those emotions have got to be, you know, high and just kind of all over the place. So yeah, like you said, I can't blame them for being, you know, just all over the place emotionally. I guess I would be the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's human nature, and I'm sure these feelings get amplified when a doctor looks you in the eye and says, by the way, you have coronavirus.
Right.
I just think I just think human nature kind of takes over, and in a time like that, we may lash out, whether it's justified or not. That's another question, but it's just people being people, and I think they'll be able to get past this, and the locker room will be fine long term.
So I know you had a question for me. You mentioned
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Yes. So all of what's going on, coronavirus, earthquakes, all that, got me thinking, which player on this current Jazz roster, if you had to be paired with them to survive a post-apocalyptic world, who would it be and why?
So I thought about this a little bit. I think the guy that comes to mind is Joe Ingles. And I'll tell you why.
You are correct.
Oh.
You are correct.
There's a correct answer.
But go ahead. I want to hear your dissertation.
Well, I think Joe, I mean, he's from Australia, and I think when most people think of Australia, they're like, oh, everyone there just lives in the outback, and everyone just knows how to, like, build fires and stuff. But I feel like Joe actually probably does. I think his survival skills and his what he can, like, endure seems to be maybe a little higher than some of the other guys. I think he would be a good scavenger. I think he would find food. I don't know. You'd want him on your side if it's, like, post-apocalyptic and there's, like, other people you need to, like, get in a fight with. He's crafty. I think now he might get under your skin as far as just, like, trash-talking you, like, constantly. That's a detriment, or that's, like, a con on his side. But I think if you want to stay alive, I'm going with Joe.
No, that's the right answer, and for all the reasons you mentioned. For me, I know if somebody... If I'm, you know, having to survive a post-apocalyptic world, I'm not going to survive. So I might as well just be entertained for the few short days that I'm around. So I think Joe Ingles would be the funniest of the crew and keep me entertained.
Yeah, definitely. I think Joe, yeah, that's a good one. I'm glad I got it right. I didn't know there was an answer.
Correct,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to let you know that there was an answer, but you passed with flying colors.
Let's jump into your Jazz, you know, Jazz fan story. One thing it's always kind of interesting is everyone kind of has a different story. Your Jazz origin story, did you grow up in Utah or Salt Lake? And have you always been a Jazz fan, first off?
Yeah. So, I mean, my story, I would consider it kind of like the Microsoft Word template of Jazz fandom. Like, born and raised in Salt Lake. I was born in the early 90s, so I was just the right age when they were going on their finals run, so extremely impressionable. So I've been a Jazz fan all my life. I definitely cried when Michael Jordan hit the game-winning jump shot over Brian Russell. Side note, I'm equal parts excited and just dreading that 10-part 30-for-30
I know.
Documentary about the Chicago Bulls, because I know how it ends, and I'm not ready for
it.
But yeah, so I'm pretty, in terms of Jazz fandom, pretty stereotypical. Anytime I was shooting hoops in my driveway, everything was narrated with Hot Rod Hundley. You know, I'm digging the Purple Mountain throwbacks. You know, those are the unis to me. So I'm basically your pretty square Jazz fandom story.
Yeah. I think it was, I did an episode with Tyson Hutchins, who you may know through Twitter. We were talking about, you know, being, you know, that love hate with, like, Michael Jordan. And I think kids growing up today maybe have the same kind of thing with LeBron, where, like, I think everyone loved Michael Jordan because he was, like, the man, especially if you were a kid. And then there was this weird thing that he was the one beating our team. And so obviously I know I was crushed, but at the same time, you couldn't help but, like, be in awe of Jordan. And it wasn't like we were just losing to, like, when we lost to the Rockets in some playoff series, it was like, I hate those guys. I hate them. I don't want them to win. But then we lose to Jordan, and there was this weird thing inside of me, at least, where it was like not happy for him, but, like, not, I don't know. Like, I couldn't take my eyes off of him still. It was this weird love hate. So when you mentioned this 30-for-30, that's going to be this 10-part series. It's like, yeah, it's just like an equal part love and equal part hate. Maybe more, a little tiny bit more hate because he beat our team. But yeah, I think he had this ability to just transcend fans into just liking him. I don't know. Was it the same way for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing when, you know, your team got beat by the best versus a team where you think, you know what, they could have beat them, they should have beat them, but losing to Michael Jordan is just one of those things where you're just like, you know what, he's the best, and the best should win, so it is what it is.
Except for he shouldn't have won, Dick Pivetta.
I'm not ready for the series. I might just skip over that part when they get to the finals.
So you mentioned, you know, kind of early 90s, Stockton Malone, heyday, glory days. So who was your favorite Jazz player? I'm going to say besides Stockton Malone, because that's probably at most people's favorites, but who besides Stockton Malone was your all-time favorite Jazz player?
So I'm all about the shooters. So probably one of my favorites has to be Kyle Korver. He was everything that I wanted to be as a basketball player as I grew up and started to play more. I mean, great shooter, better hair. He wore his socks like right up to the knee, which I thought was cool. So Kyle Korver's definitely got a special place for me in terms of my Jazz fandom. I'm actually going to say something that a lot of Jazz fans might light me up for, but Karl Malone probably doesn't even crack my top five in terms of favorite Jazz players. I mean, obviously, he's one of the most talented production-wise. He's got to be up there, but, like, for me, like, a Boris Diaw or a Joe Ingles, just their entertainment on and off the court kind of puts them in a special place for me.
Yeah, I can dig that. I mean, it's funny. When I think about, like, my favorite players, a guy similar to, like, you with Korver is Memo. For me, it's Memo.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's because he's such a happy dude, and you could just tell he just loves everything about, like, life. Like, that guy is just, like, the happiest guy. And there was a stretch, if you remember, you know, 05 to 07, just like the 05, 06 seasons. And, oh, my gosh, that guy was so fun to watch. Like, I feel like he was making game winners, like, every other night.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So Memo's that guy for me. But also, who's a random, just like random player that you always kind of liked and why?
Oh, man. I've got a few, actually. I love me some Jack Cooley. I mean, that dude was just built to set a screen. You looked at him and you're like, that guy is going to set a mean screen. He also has a story about him rescuing a dog from his landlord while he was playing overseas, and it's incredible. If you haven't read it, find the story. I think from the D News, it's great.
That's awesome.
And then who else? Oh, Mo Almond.
Okay, that's kind of a random one.
I think he had like one game in the D League for the Utah Flash where he scored like 60 points. And this guy's going to be a bucket in the league. Like, I can't wait for him. And he was just a dud.
Right.
Let's see. Oh, Raul Lopez.
Okay.
The next John Stockton, obviously he was going to continue the lineage of just great Jazz point guard. And then John Amici, you know, if you know, you know. You gotta love John Amici, so yeah, that probably rounds out my obscure.
I like it. Those are good ones.
Player list.
Jack Cooley. That's a good pick. That's a solid pick. I had this story. I don't know if you ever watched it. Maybe not. Where it was during summer league when he was with the Jazz, and we were able to get him mic'd up during a summer league practice. And it was a really big deal for us at the time because it was like a test run to see what we could do, you know, as far as like Jazz content goes and how it would go and blah, blah, blah. And we were able to mic up Jack Cooley. You could go find it. It's on YouTube. It's just called Jack Cooley Mic'd Up on the Jazz YouTube. And it's so funny. Like that guy, just like all of it is just little comments to himself, you know, like the entire thing. And, you know, he'll, like, make a three, and he'll be like, oh, athleticism. And he'll just, like, almost just like he's like in Mario World and he does something and like there's like a power up or something. So if anybody,
I can't believe I haven't seen that.
Oh yet. Yeah, go as soon as you're done with this. It's like 3 minutes long and it's just like Jack Cooley just making fun comments about everything that happens during a jazz practice. It's great. Yeah, I it's funny, like random jazz players through the years. One that's funny that came to my mind. Do you remember Keon Clark from like the early 2000s?
Of course. Yeah.
And he was actually really good in the league for a little bit. I want to see with like the Kings, and the Jazz got him. And I was super excited about getting Keon Clark on the Jazz. And then he never, I can't remember exactly what happened, but I don't know if he got injured or if he had some issues and he never really like played. And he was one that kind of was just like I was so high on and then like super disappointed that he wasn't what we thought he was going to be. Maybe like a Morris Almond, like you're like, yes, yes. And then you're like, oh, what happened?
Curse of Morris Almond.
What year was Morris? Was he like 06 or maybe 07?
Yeah, he must have been around that time. I mean, he only played a handful of games with the Jazz.
Yeah.
But he was a D-League sensation.
Yeah. Yeah, he was one of those guys. I think he was, I want to say number 22 because that's maybe when he was drafted.
Yep.
And he was one of these guys because he was like the prototypical frame. And he had like a shot or at least a sweet looking jumper. And yeah, like most fans are like, dang, like this guy's going to like be great for us. And then he just kind of flamed out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that happened. Yeah, it happens. So speaking of jersey numbers, this is the 17th episode of Jazzed that you're on. And when I think of number 17, I think of Ronnie Price.
Naturally.
What memories, what comes to mind when you think of Ronnie Price and the Jazz?
I forgot what year it was, but the Jazz were playing the Lakers in the playoffs, and Luke Walton was basically cherry-picking underneath the basket, and he got a loose ball, and he was going up for what he thought was a wide-open dunk, and Ronnie Price came out of nowhere and just erased his dunk. Absolutely erased it. And there's something about a shorter guard blocking somebody's shot that is just like chef's kiss, just the best. And bonus points for being in the playoffs and against the Lakers.
He was like a great guy to have on your team because obviously he was undersized, but he was super athletic. He was always diving for loose balls. You know, some games he'd get hot, you know, and make a few threes and have a great dunk. He's one of those guys I think you want to have on your team, a guy like Ronnie Price.
He was an alum of Utah Valley State College.
Yes.
And for some reason, if you go to college in the state of Utah, regardless of the school, you instantly are adopted into the community. So he is a Wolverine and a member of the Utah community forever.
Totally. And I'm glad you said State College because I still think of it as UVSC, even though it's been so long that it's UVU. Sometimes I still catch myself and I'm like, oh, UVSC. And then I'll get these weird looks from younger people and they're like, what?
That's how old you are, Matt. You're dating yourself.
I know. I'll be like, I remember when it was UVSC. So yeah, another fun topic that is just always kind of, you know, cool to talk about is just jazz memories. Do you go to a lot of games? I'd assume you go to a handful.
Yeah, you know, I go whenever I can. I probably have to say one of my favorite memories, I think it was back in 2010, the Thunder were in town. The Thunder were really just starting to get rolling as a core with Durant and Westbrook and Harden and Ibaka. I think that was the first year that they'd made the playoffs with that core, but Durant went off for like 40-something, hit the game-tying three, descended into overtime. But it was just one of those games where Deron Williams just used like his size and his strength to get wherever he wanted to on the court. And with a couple seconds left in overtime, gets open on a dribble handoff, knocks down an 18-footer, top of the key, Jazz win. And it was just one of those games where you could just feel how loud it was, like the actual just like vibration of the arena.
I love it. There's nothing like being at the arena for like a huge game or just like a fun moment or things that just come up out of nowhere. One that comes to my mind, it was a playoff game in 07. We were in the conference finals, so it was the year that we, you know, beat the Rockets and then beat the Warriors, and we played the Spurs in the conference finals. And the Spurs like waxed us both games in San Antonio, and then we went back to, you know, Energy Solutions at the time for games three, and I want to say we won by like 28. It was one of these games where it was like a blue out. Like everyone had like these navy or baby blue t-shirts on. I can't remember. I think it said like I can't remember if it was the one team, one dream or not. But the Jazz just played so great, and they just like worked the Spurs, and the crowd was just going nuts. It turned out that that was the only game we'd win in the series. But that game specifically was so fun. Like that was a great game to be at.
You're right, though. There's nothing better than being at the game when something like that happens. Like, yeah, it's great to watch it on TV, but just being in the arena is a completely different experience.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but like maybe 10, 20 minutes ago, there was like another aftershock. I don't know. Did you feel it?
Oh, yeah. I felt it. I just realized now I probably don't have enough toilet paper in my house if things go south.
I saw this like graphic. I don't know if you saw it, where it was like the past week, and it was like all like the graphic of like this the United States, and it was showing like, you know, grocery consumption or shopping in every state how much it's up, and like the state of Utah is up like 253%, and it was like the most by far in the country, and now with these earthquakes, like. Everything is going to be gone off the shelf. It's kind of crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right now I own what I would consider to be a reasonable amount of toilet paper, but by week's end, I will be just below the poverty line in terms of toilet paper.
Well, before we let you go, I know you're a huge movie guy. And I know this because I tweeted out some random... I was sitting there trying to be social distancing a couple nights ago, and I tweeted out... First person who can guess which movie I'm watching, I'll send you $10. It was like the most random thing I've ever done. Just because I was bored and I've seen the movie 1,000 times. So I got all these people, you know, like tweeting at me. And then, first of all, you're really good at like searching Twitter and finding old tweets.
You know what? It's just, as soon as you put that up, I'm like, there's probably a good chance he's already tweeted about this movie. So I'm going to go through his timeline and find him mentioning this movie, and unfortunately I was wrong.
Yeah.
I went through your Twitter timeline as fast as I could. I didn't get it.
I know.
So props to whoever guessed right. But
yeah, so I tweeted out like I'm watching a 90s comedy, and I guess a few months back I was like, what's the best 90s comedy? And I like put out like Tommy Boy and Dumb and Dumber, which are the best. Like those are the best ones.
Oh yeah.
But I happen to be watching So I Married an Axe Murderer, which is kind of a personal favorite. I think people like that movie, but for some reason it's kind of stuck with me as like I've always just loved it. Maybe because most things in my life, my older brothers loved them. So then I naturally loved them too. And so I was watching So I Married an Axe Murderer and someone guessed it. And luckily that dude got to $10 of my money.
Good man. keeping people busy during coronavirus.
Yes. What comes to mind? Favorite movies? Give me one if you got one, or genres, if you've got action or a drama, whatever it is.
Yeah, so in no particular order, I love Shawshank Redemption, The Godfather, Casablanca, Inglourious Bastards, 12 Angry Men, Rear Window, The Usual Suspects. I mean, I love a good comedy, but for whatever reason, like my top 10 or so favorite list is mostly dramas and actions. But I The Dark Knight, Goodfellas, those are just movies I could watch over and over.
Nice. Those are like first of all, those are like a film class teacher's like favorite. Like you had some film classes, didn't you, in your day?
You know what? I actually did.
I knew
Spot on.
Because when I hear Rear Window, the first thing that comes to my mind is watching it in my 12th grade film yep. class. And yeah, that's a good one. Hitchcock. It's a good pick.
Yeah, what about you?
I always say my favorite movie of all time is Forrest Gump. I just love that movie. I think it's a combination of I love Tom Hanks. Probably my favorite actor. If not, he's right up there. And I'm also one of these people who when things happen in my childhood, like watching Forrest Gump when that came out, I was 10. It kind of like sticks with me, you know, like I'm rewatching So I Married an Axe Murderer from 93. And I don't know. I think Forrest Gump has, I always say it has a bit of everything. It's got, you know, comedy and drama and action and love and heartbreak. And, you know, it's got, you know, a feel good to it. And I don't know. Forrest Gump to me is my favorite, but I'm a movie guy. I kind of see like almost everything. I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan. I'm really excited for this new movie, Tenet, to come out, just because it looks so crazy fun and bizarre. But yeah, you mentioned Shawshank. That's such a good movie. And also 94, same as Forrest Gump. And I remember where I was when I first saw that, and the climax at the end, right at the end, you know, through the tunnel and everything, mm-hmm. through the wall, I was just like, I'm one of these guys where I was just like, I cannot believe it. And I was just so happy. It's such a great ending to that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And then his boy, Morgan, you know, Red comes out, and what's the city, like, Sewantaneo or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Like, that's right.
Yeah. Then he finds him, and yeah, dang, that's a good one.
And you know what? I think we could all use a nice Shawshank Redemption ending right about now, where we're all just chilling on the beach.
Yeah. I should also ask you, because I'm social distancing, I came up with this random greatest action movie star of all time bracket. I don't know if you saw me tweet this out last night, but I'm sitting.
I missed that, no.
Yeah, so I'm sitting at home, and I spent about 45 minutes or so, and I just start. I'm just like, there's no March Madness bracket. I'm making a bracket, so I put out, you know, the usual suspects of action heroes. But mm-hmm. who do you think, as far as movies, who's the number one actor as far as action star goes, actor wise?
Oh man.
I know, I just put you on the spot with that.
No. Well, in terms of like actual acting skills, or like, oh, these are just the best action movies?
I think I labeled as action hero. So let me give you my, because I broke it out into top 32. Let me give you like the one seeds and maybe the two seeds. And this is all just my own thing. The one seeds I put out, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Harrison Ford, and Tom Cruise. Those are my one seeds. And my two seeds are Bruce Willis, Keanu Reeves, The Rock, and Will Smith actually was a two seed, which right now he's losing to Jackie Chan, the seven seed in that side of the bracket. So I guess I was a horrible two seed. So yeah, those are kind of like the top eight. What do you think about that?
You know what? First of all, every year in March Madness, I feel like a seven beats a two. So I think you were spot on in putting those two in the same side of the bracket. I would say Tom Cruise. I think in Mission Impossible, I mean, obviously Arnold Schwarzenegger and Stallone, those guys have done a myriad of action movies, but what Tom Cruise does in Mission Impossible, I'll give him the nod. Yeah.
Tommy.
Tom Cruise.
And he just seems to kind of he's getting better. Like the dude's like 50 and his movies just become better and better, and the action is better and better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think these last few Mission Impossible movies have been actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah. When I saw Fallout, the most recent, I was like, is that the best action movie of all time? Like, and I know that's like hyperbole and stuff, but I'm watching it and I'm like, that movie had so many ups and like highs and just like tension and thrills. Like, and then you factor in that the dude is like doing all his own stunts and flying helicopters and jumping out of planes at like I don't even know like what the altitude was, like 20,000 feet or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, dang, this is nuts.
No, I agree. I agree 100%.
Well, Luke, thank you for, you know, taking the time. I know it's a crazy, you know, time, and especially a crazy day here in Utah, to jump on the podcast and talk a little jazz. Hopefully fans out there, you know, can kind of get a little touch of jazz fix just listening to, you know, us chat.
No, thanks for having me, and I hope you and the rest of Jazz Nation can stay safe.
Likewise. And if you're not already, you can find Luke on Twitter. It's at Lucas Falk. He's a good dude, a good guy to follow. I've been following him for years. We've actually never met in person, which is surprising since I worked around your brother for so many years. But yeah, go follow him, go tweet at him, and go let him know what you think of his movie selections, and who might you want as your post-apocalyptic, that's hard to say.
Partner. It's hard to say, man. I tripped over it.
Thanks again, man. And thanks to everybody for listening, and go Jazz.